Hello, everybody. It is now 6:14 here in Finland on the sixth day of August 2014, and I'm beginning a new series with Sagittarius rising and the moon in Sagittarius rising, so I trust it will be somewhat of a philosophical nature. The rising sign tells us the degree let's see, come to that, and I believe it's the pyramids and the Sphinx. It deals with the deep mysteries of nature. And then when we go to the moon, we have an Easter sunrise service, very promising. And we go to the sun, and it is a street, a street pageant. Okay, let's see what Mercury gives us. An evening lawn party and Jupiter. Rock formations at the edge of a precipice. I suppose, speaking of the history of the Earth, Uranus is in the third house. I trust we will be able to give some different points of view. And we have the 0 degrees of Scorpio on the midheaven. I hope we can go deep. And it is a confrontation, I think, with Jupiter at the vertex, and Vesta, the planet of commitment, on the midheaven in Scorpio, a house raising. Well, I hope it's a temple raising. And let's see, with Mars, deep sea divers, let us go deep in this matter. And Saturn is now direct, a woman, the father of her own child. It seems to blend the Holy Family in an unusual way. And what's this all about, friends? Well, I'm beginning with the second part of the rays and the initiations. I think the part that is read most frequently has to do with the 14 rules, maybe the first 300 and something pages. And we had a group, a 28 rules group with Stefan Dobayesh, and we worked at that for 7 years, starting in 2002, and gave, I think, quite a few people the opportunity to study those rules in depth. And meanwhile, while they were going on, I wrote commentaries on them. Those commentaries are now available at Makara, www.makara.us. What I would, of course, love to do is to be able to have a chance to speak conversationally about those rules, even as we are right now studying the rules in the Moria Federation faculty. And we have, I think, some very good conversations about them. But I would like to be able to offer some sort of conversational approach to the study of the 14 rules in depth. However, since I've already done part of that work, since I have already written over a 7-year period, a rather extensive, maybe exhaustive, but certainly not, well, it's exhausting for me, but certainly not in the kind of depth that the Tibetan material deserves, but as deep as I could go, since I've already done that, I have to concentrate on the things that I have not done. And the latter part of the book, The Rays and the Initiations, is such an effort, such a task, that I have not yet addressed myself to. I think, of course, some previous reading of the 14 rules and work within those rules is important for an understanding of the latter part of the book. All in all, if I look at what has been completed thus far, the book Esoteric Astrology has been commented on in a thorough manner, line by line. The latter part of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, let us say the last 100 pages or so, has also been treated, and this includes the very difficult to interpret stanzas of Xian, which he offers, and which I have only completed in verbal form. A treatise on cosmic fire has commentary going up, written commentary going up to the last 100 pages. I've done quite a bit of work on the old commentary, the techniques of integration, the Blessed One, the techniques of fusion, the laws of repulse, and the stanzas for the angel of the presence. So a fair amount of work has been done in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. I have intentions to deal with some old commentary work in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, where he introduces the rays for the first time in terms of the old commentary, and the ray lords speak to each other in very revealing ways. Also, I've just finished some work on the Egoic Lotus. I call it the Egoic Lotus webinar book, video book. And there are 71 programs there and about 175, 176 hours of programming. And there I have traced the evolution of the human being and made many correlations with factors that we are familiar with in the teaching. I've made those correlations with the development and unfoldment of the egoic lotus. So I think there'll be something there for you. Now, you know, it is my hope that I'll be able to do more work in esoteric psychology along this line, and maybe a treatise on white magic along this line. Whether or not work in esoteric healing will be done, that remains to be seen. I think there are those who maybe, I think, know that book better than I do, but the more I get into it, the more insights seem to occur. But that will not be an immediate priority. Basically, what I'm attempting to do is take a look at the Tibetans' work. It's massive. It has to be assimilated as well as we can before the year 2025, because during that year he has said, from that time on, that time forth, from 2025 and after 2025, he will be offering his third installment of the teaching. But it is dependent. I mean, when that comes out is dependent upon how well we've done in assimilating the teaching that we've already been given. And so, you know, as I look at myself and others in this esoteric field, I realize that the degree of assimilation could certainly be better than it is. And I'm trying to contribute to that. I don't want to get in the way between the reader and the Tibetan. The best thing you can do, of course, is to read the Tibetan by yourself and ponder deeply on it and see what occurs to you as a result of your reading, to see what intuitions are maybe stimulated and what illumination may come. But I'd like to offer some seed thoughts, some perspectives, some ways of understanding things that maybe the reader will not have thought of before and which maybe the reader will find useful. That's what I'm hoping to do. And I don't absolutely do not claim to understand everything that's in these books. All I can do is give you my take on certain things that are said. Oh yes, and you know, it is my hope as well somehow to work in the book Discipleship in the New Age. My colleague Elena Dramchini and I did some written work on that, and that was some years ago, and some of those analyses of the various disciples are found on Makara, and Elena has continued that. She's a very fine rectifier of charts, and she's gone on to try to rectify some of the charts for which we do not really have an accurate birth time, or if we have one, it's very rounded off. But I would like to be able to do some work in the beginning and end of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, and maybe in Dyna 1. Now, you know, again, I have done written work in these areas. Those Discipleship in the New Age commentaries, such as I have done, should be on Makara. the beginning of the book and the end of the book, I think those are pretty complete. But there's something about the conversational style of discussing and how different ideas may come to one that did not perhaps in this more rigorous, laborious itemization of thoughts. Of course, maybe there's more accuracy in the written work, but sometimes more fertility of ideas in the spontaneous expression of thoughts that come when you read these books. Then, of course, there's Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, and there again, I've done a lot of work in the early part of the book before D.K. continues with the teaching of his disciples, his personal letters to them. You know, I don't think it's possible to get all that done, and again, I've done that written work, but there's a lot that might be useful to talk about, you know. And I realize this is like some kind of gigantic study group. a real study group would have you on the webinar and we would discuss and so forth, but and that's very good, and some people are handling things that way. What I would just like to provide for you, however, is a fairly uninterrupted flow of my ideas, or the ideas that come to me, or really the thoughts, ideas, thoughts that come to me. And then, you know, perhaps you can use them in your own study groups. I realize that what we have here is maybe a different mode of operating. Some people are used to the written word, and they study together from the written word and so forth. This is a different method. And, you know, it may seem a little less organized, but it is very faithful to the text. And it just simply goes through, you know, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, almost word by word, writing different things down as I go, and sometimes simply talking about them. And maybe some will find this mode of working congenial. That would be my hope, because above all, what I want to do is stimulate an interest in the Tibetan Master's books and the will to enter them in a very deep way, and the forward progress in the task of assimilating what the Tibetan has said and correlating what he has said in various of his books and applying, of course, in the service to which you are called, that which you have learned from the Tibetan. So much to learn from the Tibetan. And obviously, you know, he has talked about the people whose mind ranges all over the planet, and they don't really settle down to one particular area in which they can work. I don't know whether that accusation can be leveled at me or not. Maybe it can. But I try to stick to a few books that I think I know fairly well, or at least I have ideas about them, which may be useful to people, and then offer those ideas for their own use, and they can apply what they may learn from me, and certainly what they learn from the Tibetan, in their own way. That's the key. We are all self-taught. You know, we take what various teachers say, we try to assimilate it, but it's our own thoughts in relation to their thoughts, and our own thoughts in relation to our own experiences, which are really ultimately of importance. So, you know, having just finished this Egoic Lotus book and done some work on the adventures and identification, I do those periodically. You know, it's interesting, it's kind of like a cycle. I don't know when it will occur, but I get deeply into knowledge for a while, and then I say, wait, it's time now again to work on identification, on identicalizing identity and finding it everywhere. And so periodically I do that, and I've just, you know, created three programs. What I'm working on now is meditations on identification, and I think I can do those now and then and add to people's penetration into the great mystery of being. Certainly for me it is a mystery, and as layer after layer of the veils dissolve or are lifted, I'm always amazed at what there is there and how much more still has to be lifted before the true light shines. Okay, so this is our chart for beginning, and I noticed that Uranus is conjunct the part of fortune in the third house of mind. So this is promising. It's exactly conjunct, although it is retrograde, and I have Venus exactly on my ascendant at this moment. So, you know, that might say something that some soul perspective will come forth, and Jupiter in the sign of the will to illumine, which is Leo, telling us what will happen at the vertex, and what we cannot avoid, and Mercury right there as well. So there's a, it's kind of interesting. It's very much like the chart of the University of the Seven Rays itself, which I think had about 22 degrees of Sagittarius rising and a number of planets in the eighth house of psychology and occultism. So I'm thinking also that there's three mounds of knowledge on a philosopher's head. Interesting, that is where we find Ceres, almost at the end of the sign Libra, and it will be to cultivate philosophy, I believe. Ceres is the cultivator and kind of a harvester, and we have a very sort of Ray 3, a very, very sort of Ray 3 symbol there, and then come all these Scorpio planets. I think, you know, Sagittarius is very one-pointed and quite a non-deflectable sign. I don't know how long this will take me. This is, you know, probably 400 pages long, and the astrology book took me a long time. I think it took, you know, somehow 2 years, maybe even 3 years, because it's not possible to work except intermittently, you know, sometimes intensively, and then for months, not possible. So we'll see and how this goes, and let us think together as we read through the second part of the rays and the initiations. That's all we can do, is to think in a hopefully illuminated manner with some touching of the intuition. We'll think through together what the Tibetan has offered, and it goes very, very deep, just as the rays do. You know, the rules, we see some of those rules, which unless you're an initiate of the fourth degree or even fifth degree, you cannot understand in any reality. There may be something that you say, okay, well, I can theorize about this, and indeed you can. But those rules are the rules for group work during the Aquarian Age, and they do apply to the ashram. And they don't just apply to groups of well-meaning students who are trying to understand them, although that is important, their approach. They are very, very deep. So we're dealing with the fifth volume of the Rays and Initiations, you know, Esoteric Psychology 1 and 2, Esoteric Astrology, Esoteric Healing, and finally the fifth volume, the Rays and the Initiations, which, again, being his last book, interestingly, returns to the theme of initiation, and in his first book, he began there with initiation, human and solar. It's a subject of great interest. It inspires people. It promotes their aspiration. It does all those good things to make a true aspirant out of an individual. Remember, all true aspirants have taken the first initiation, the birth of the Christ in the heart. And until we are a third degree initiate, we are considered to be an aspirant. And Master DK's purpose is to train aspirants for initiation. At first, the first two initiations, and then later he discussed even the third as a possibility for his training. All right, well, that's been just a little bit of an introduction. I'd like to, this is me trying to find out exactly what time to begin, and indeed I did. I began as I said I would. And let's see, this is part two of the Rays and Initiations. Well, I will use my usual method, which is to kind of use a red bracket. And when I want to write something, I won't always write something, but when I want to write something, I will put it in the red bracket so you can distinguish easily what it is that Tibetan has written, and you'll be able to tell right away, and what my commentary on these matters might be. So he's beginning with some introductory remarks. Excuse me. We now come to the final part of a treatise on the seven rays, and I have in mind three things which it appears to me necessary to do. And remember, this treatise written on the second ray. As a matter of fact, let's make sure that I have my word substitution program going properly. Somehow it wound up with UK English. Written on the second ray, whereas the treatise on cosmic fire is written on the first and third rays. So I have in mind three things which it appears to me necessary to do. These three will make this treatise not only the textbook of the new psychology, and that's all the five, really, even healing and astrology, they must be included, but also a more vital factor in human consciousness, because the fact of initiation will be emphasized. I know Master Moria doesn't like too much the term initiation, at least that's how it came through in the Agni Yoga books, but I think the way DK explains, the very rational and clear way that he explains the meaning of initiation, I think would be acceptable to Master M. All right, so these three are, and let us see what they are, the three things he wants to do, emphasize. I propose to deal with the theme of initiation in order to prepare the world of men for the restoration of the mysteries, and these are the mysteries of initiation. This is okay, I have to make sure this U.S. English thing. I understand what's happened now. Okay. Right. I have to have my bracket in UK English. All right. These are the mysteries of initiation. So they will be very prominent in the forthcoming age, and the Christ himself will be the initiator in public or semi-public ceremonies for the first and second initiations. And three great groups, the Masonic organism, the church organism, and the banded esoteric organisms, respectively on rays 1, 2, 3, will offer their candidates for initiations. So will the new esoteric schools, which will be related, I think, mostly to the banded esoteric organisms. I will give some definite teaching on the centers from the planetary angle and also from the angle of the individual aspirant. And he's done this, of course, much in esoteric healing, maybe even more exhaustively, but here he talks about the centers in relation to initiation. I will endeavor to relate the seven ray energies to the five and the seven initiations. The five that bring us up to mastership, and the seven that bring us up to being a Chohan of the seventh degree, where the Christ and the Buddha now stand, at least in the process of that initiation, and to the three and the seven centers in a new and more arresting manner. So again, wherever there's a seven, always look for ten. Ten, when you find a seven. The Kabbalah suggests that, you know, with the principal triad, Kether, Chokhmah, and Bina, above the seven other Sephiroth. So there's so many threes and sevens, and each one of the initiations has a particular ray associated, most associated with it. Now, in the Egoic Lotus video book, I talked about all the rays in relation to the process of initiation, especially the first, second, and third initiation related to the sacrifice petals. So anyway, just reviewing this, deal with the theme of initiation, right? Definite teaching on the centers from the planetary angle and from the angle of the individual aspirant, and relate the seven rays to the five and to the seven initiations and to the three and seven centers in a still more, arresting manner. He's already, even before this time, this is the last book, remember, given us so much material, most of which remains for us uncorrelated in any significant manner. So that's what some of the hope for these correlational studies is. This is a large order and one not easy to fulfill because so much has already been given out anent initiation. The subject is dangerously familiar, meaning when we've heard it 1,000 times, we just don't pay any attention anymore and we stop penetrating. So we must continue to penetrate for depth of meaning, even if terms are familiar. That's obvious, but it's all too easy to forget. You know, people don't take things in and they say, oh, I've heard it 1,000 times, and then that's their excuse for not even trying to take things in. So we have to catch ourselves if we develop a glib familiarity with certain terms, the meaning of which we really don't understand. Okay, by that I mean that certain preconceived ideas are already present in men's minds. And many of these are not factual in nature and need to be discarded or at best reinterpreted. So it's going to be hard sometimes to give up our pet theories and our apparent understanding of the initiation process because we may have derived a lot of comfort from it. But in, you know, comfort, one of the heads of the Hydra, we've got to get rid of it. I have myself dealt in a broad and general way with the subject of initiation in one of my earliest books, along with Letters on Occult Meditation, right? Initiation, Human and Solar also, also scattered through all my writings over the years is a mass of information which needs collating and bringing together as a basis for instruction of disciples in training for initiation. And so we've done this to a certain extent, and the esoteric healing classes have done this, and we have compilations on all the centers, and I would advise you, you know, to go to our Moria Federation's affiliate Ageless Wisdom compilations and see what you can find there that may be of value. That's another thing I would like to do. I would like to take certain of these compilations, which offer us the opportunity for topical study, and really pay attention to these particular references which target one particular subject, and see if we cannot increase the light in that way. In Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, I gave out much more upon this subject, and also information of a deeply esoteric nature anent the ashrams of the Master. So whoever really wants to study the ashrams of the Masters, what we have to do is certainly study Dina 1, and he told us, interestingly, that we are to use a discipleship in the New Age to attract others into the ashrams. It's one of the major purposes of that book. The second volume of the book also contains much that is new and should serve to bring the whole subject much closer to public understanding. It's not an easy book, Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, but it is deeply useful. So, it contains so much teaching. Even though DK is going to give out the new teaching, I just cannot see how what he has given so far, also in The Secret Doctrine, can be abrogated. It really has to be studied, and it will place more demands upon the students of the future than they may realize. Okay. In the instructions now to be given, however, I shall endeavor to cover the ground not already considered and look at the subject of initiation from the angle of the seven rays. All right. From the effect upon the centers, planetary and individual, and from the point of view of esoteric training of the accepted aspirant or disciple. It really amounts to the same thing. The accepted disciple is an aspirant. So here it's going to get much more technical. These instructions were begun in March 1946. It's interesting that this was a time when the work of the of the new seed group of 24 was being discontinued. I guess DK had certain writings he had to prepare through AAB, and her health was in question, and 30 years of work or planned. So, you know, he had to discontinue some of the work he was doing, writing letters to the various remaining students out of the group of 24. And maybe there were not so many by this time, but he did, you know, write for them in a very broad way, taking into consideration the needs for the remainder of their life. And basically he said, look, I've given you enough for the rest of your life. Just review the material and study what I've given you in these last letters, and you will see that I've, you know, basically I've taken care of you for the rest of your life. But then when I think about all of this work that had to be done between, for 3 years, now Alice Bailey died in December of 1949, so this was the 3.5 years before her passing. It must have been very intensive. And so we have to realize the urgent way in which he was writing for the future. The final volume of A Treatise on the Seven Rays will eventually change the attitude of men's minds towards the mysteries and towards the activity of spiritual transference, which is one of the names given by the masters to the basic mystery of initiation. Transference to what? Well, you know, in a way, from focus within the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos and even solar logos into the etheric vehicle of the solar logos, that is, the cosmic ethers. So the discussion of initiation has been given all the way through the writings, but the strongest focus was in the very first book, Initiation, Human and Solar, and now in this one, and in great depth. And I might say that some of D.K.'s writings are written really for initiates. He certainly said this was true, and by that we mean initiates of the third degree. He certainly said it was true of his work in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And now we come, well, you know, when you look at the rules for initiations for disciples and initiates, you realize that so many of them are written for the initiate understanding, and, you know, we're reaching out towards that, and hopefully we can achieve something of it. And the latter part of this book, many factors in it as well, written for the deeper understanding of those who have taken the third degree. In due time, our educational centers, particularly those concerned with adult education, and that's the kind of thing, you know, the Arcane School, the Mori Federation, University of Seven Rays, School of Esoteric Studies, and so forth, they're involved with the adult education, the continuing education, we might say. And let's call it that, continuing education along an esoteric line that they will take into calculation normally and customarily. The fact of future initiation, where their students are concerned. And notice he's careful about using the word future, because so many people anticipate that they are candidates for initiation when they haven't really fulfilled what has to be fulfilled. So in due time, our educational centers, particularly those concerned with adult education, will take into calculation, I guess there's a mathematics for it, normally and customarily, the fact of future initiation where their students are concerned, and will study their graduates from this angle in order to give advice or recommendation in these in institutions. The elements of true esotericism will be taught, though they will not then be regarded as esoteric. So this is apparently later during the age of Aquarius, when the new esoteric schools emerge. Even now we're working on them, and DK has given us justification for working on them. If you study one of the latter chapters of Letters on Occult Meditation, we will see that basically he said even now we can, then, you know, 1920 or so, work on the emergence of the new esoteric schools, and promising results are occurring, or were occurring, even then. So the new adult education will take into consideration normally and customarily, the initiatory potential of their students and their graduates, I suppose, will be directed in a line which will lead to initiation. One day, these schools will actually present candidates for initiation, especially, I suppose, the advanced schools. It will be apparent to you that this long treatise is in the nature of a preparatory thesis covering a vast area of information. Preparatory for what? Maybe, well, let's see, you know, there's going to be more coming in the third installment. The first two volumes dealt with the sevenfold nature of man and with the influence of the seven basic energies or rays upon his unfoldment and his history, and in a briefer manner, upon the world in which he lives and upon the environment which aids and conditions him. So basically, you know, the seven rays through esoteric psychology. In the third volume, we took into consideration the influences of the constellations and planets. Now, they are really inseparable from the study of esoteric psychology. They must be included. The influences of the constellations and planets upon the man and upon our planet, the Earth, and gave much time to consideration of esoteric astrology. Well, it's what did DK say, his most occult book, because it deals entirely with energies. The rays, the signs, the constellations, and the planets are all of them closely interrelated, and the human being is the recipient of the energies and forces they emanate or distribute, and this makes a man what he essentially is at any one time whilst in incarnation. The energies and forces are changing constantly through progressions. Let's see if I can do this. Progressions and directions in the astrological chart. And also in each fresh incarnation. So we are constantly being conditioned by different energies and forces, and even in the same incarnation, those energies and forces are changing all the time, and we want to know the manner in which they are changing so that we can use them. We next considered the subject of esoteric subject of healing, because of the necessity of understanding the limitations. It's really a book on limitations, isn't it, and how to overcome them? Psychological and physical, which restrict man's free expression of divinity. So the vehicles must be in good order. And as so often for so many of us, they are not really. None of us, at least in the Tibetans, way of thinking has really perfect health. We dealt with a major condition which has to be faced and comprehended if humanity is ever to step off the ordinary path of evolution onto the path of discipleship and initiation. And humanity as a whole is far from that, even though in a sense humanity will take the first initiation. This means a certain number of human beings who will leaven the entire mass, but it doesn't mean that all human beings will necessarily be treading the path of discipleship and initiation. Even into the next round, this will not be the case. Man has to become aware of the ray effects of the place the centers play in his advance and unfoldment, and of the play of energies and forces which produce the difficulties and the diseases, and can at the same time cure them and bring about the liberation of the man. So, you know, how to use the energies and forces to offset limitations to which the human being is subject. And the methods of healing, they are all, in this book, quite subtle methods. We're not talking about the ordinary medical and ameliorative surgical methods, although he does not discount their value. We're talking about the use of subtle energies directed towards the soul, towards the different areas of the etheric body and so forth, and this will take some centuries really to develop. Okay. From the consideration of the limitations, we pass to an entirely new theme and an entirely new concept as regards man's education when he has reached a relatively very advanced stage of unfoldment. This is the rays and the initiations. This book is a book related to the new education. I gave you the new teaching and then the Antikarana. This is in the rays and initiations, or the mode and method whereby the initiate could relate in one great fusion or at one moment, not only the soul and the personality, but monad, soul, and personality. So a very integrative, fusing teaching, very integrative, fusing teaching appears here in this book. This teaching has carried all that has hitherto been given down the ages another step further on and indicated the next stage of development of the disciples. So, you know, some people say the Tibetan is passé, you know, and immediately Alice Bailey died. Some other channels come forth with the new and improved teaching, and yet, you know, we cannot fulfill what the Tibetan has given even the next 2,000 years when you look at the content of some of these rules. So it's just human eagerness and also ignorance and also pride, which causes one to discount the depth of this teaching given from the hierarchy as if it could possibly have some sort of time limitation on it because, let's say, it was given before 1950. It is ludicrous, of course. And now will come the third installment of the Tibetan, and it will show that other efforts, though I'm sure well-meaning, have been subject to very human limitations, and such is not the case when teaching is given by the master. The time has come, as hierarchy had foreseen, for further light upon the endless way. Well, I guess the way is endless in a particular universe, maybe not endless, because I think we have a finite cyclic universe here, but since there's an infinite succession of manifestations of the great breath, we can call it the endless way. Teaching anent the five initiations, which confronts all aspirants, notice he uses that word, I suppose relating even to those who are aspirants for those higher degrees, has long been given and has become public property. It has meant very little to most people and nothing at all to the mass of men. So he's basically saying even students such as we are, who have been, who study these matters, we have a lot more to learn. It has been regarded by the intelligentsia as vague and visionary nonsense subject, you know, as they are to the limitations of the overly powerful concrete mind. Some few have admitted that these initiations may be possible, and others say that they are simply symbolic modes of indicating some final achievement which mankind faces. Well, they're a lot more literal than that, aren't they? Still others have accepted this teaching and have come to regard the initiation as goals and have then taken the necessary steps to prove the veridical nature of their beliefs. Now, that's where we want to find ourselves, right? They have proved it, have become initiate, and have attained the status of master of the wisdom and taken their place within the hierarchy. So this is our objective. And our service will increase tremendously if we can do this. There is therefore a certain familiarity about these goals, the service they could entail, and the consummation of the hierarchical possibilities. This in itself indicates that the time had come when certain faint indications of that which lies behind the mysteries, and of that which is to be seen ahead of those who have achieved initiation, should be somewhat clarified. And does he mean the third? Because the others are, you know, probationary initiations. They should be somewhat clarified. I have therefore started to impart three phases of information. Okay. I gave out teaching which indicated the mode of bridging the gap between the three lower worlds and the world of the spiritual triad. Now, this is the Antichoronic teaching. In doing this, it became apparent that there were three groups or levels of consciousness which had to be recognized. One, the three worlds of human evolution. We are familiar, mental plane, astral plane, physical plane. Two, the three levels of the mental plane, the level of the concretizing mind upon which the mental unit is found, the level on which the soul is to be found, that's the egoic lotus, largely, and the level of the abstract or higher mind. These are three minds, and in one sense, they must unite. Sometimes other three minds are discussed in Three Minds Unite, but these three must unite, and then the three worlds of superhuman evolution, the levels of the spiritual triad Atma Buddhi Manas, to which the Antikarana makes application, and the nature of which, the nature of this impersonal life we begin to feel and experience when we are somewhat succeeding in building the Antikarana. Between the higher three and the lower three and embracing the mental plane was a definite gap. Why is this? Well, we just hadn't come far enough yet. Maybe the failure on the moon chain. We had not come far enough in our evolution to bridge that gap. A break in the continuity of consciousness, conscious contact, or an area where there was no channeling for the inpouring of higher energies. Thus, the need for the Antikarana as just such a channel, right? The need for the as just such a channel. Here the teaching of the conscious building of the Antikarana was required. And thus the gap between the mental unit, see all this is quite technical occultism, between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom, between the personality indwelt by the soul and the spiritual triad could be bridged by the aspirant himself. You know, and when we look here, and this is the Fellowship of Cosmic Fire, and we're dealing with AAB diagrams, and we're looking at number 8, and this is exactly the gap which must be bridged. Here we are given its diagrammatic form, and also, let's see. Okay, Fellowship Cosmic Fire, and this is, we'll look at these, which Tuya has created, my wife has created this, and here, rendering, I think, DK's egoic lotus into the proper colors. Here's a close-up of this gap, which has to be bridged, and, you know, this is familiar to all of us theoretically, and the experience of doing it is the very thing which we must learn to cultivate. Okay. Learn to recognize that experience. All right. So it could be bridged by the aspirant itself. Okay, so we're looking here at three phases of information. So one of them was learning about the Antikarana and its method of connecting the personality, the soul-infused personality, and the spiritual triad. The second, I found it necessary also to indicate the nature of the way of the higher evolution, which had been hinted at, but absolutely no information had been given. You know, and now we just take it as if it belongs to us. It's amazing. Given first in Initiation Human to Solar. And when I worked on the verbal part of the conclusion of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, I did focus very much on the way of higher evolution, and I brought in all the three places where he has discussed it, namely Initiation Human and Solar, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and The Rays and the Initiation. So all of those were brought together, and I've given my impressions on that. But of course, one needs constantly to revisit it. It's not that we're going to be able to do those things immediately or tread that kind of path, but kind of seeing where everything will lead is a great inspiration. Okay, it is the way which opens out before the master of the wisdom of the fifth degree. It used to be taken at the fifth degree, but now the sixth, that way is now taken at the sixth, leading to states of identification and levels of awareness which lie outside the planetary sphere altogether. The following of this way enables the master to abstract himself from the seven planes of our planetary life and divest himself of all we understand of material existence, so we can call this leaving the cosmic physical plane. Forget not that our seven planes are only the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, and move on to the cosmic astral plane and even beyond. These are stages of vibration about which we can only theorize. You know, Tibetan has given us so much that's so far ahead of us, and yet it stabilizes our way as we attempt actually to evolve in a way sanctioned by the spiritual hierarchy. And then number three, I have therefore opened up the subject of the possibility of the higher initiations, which confront the members of the hierarchy. And in this connection, it is useful to remember that, number one, the council chamber at Shambhala provides a goal for members of the hierarchy, but not an abiding place, not for fifth-degree initiates. Only some on the first ray may abide there, but not all. It's a goal. So we cannot talk glibly of Shambhala, entering Shambhala at will and talking to Sanakumara at will. You know, these are all products of ignorance and insufficient familiarity with the depths of the teaching. So they will be adjusted in time. So in this connection, it's useful to remember that the seven paths which stretch out before a master are entered by treading the way of higher evolution. It is the monad who treads this way, not the personality or the soul, as we commonly consider the word soul. And number three, the so-called third initiation, the transfiguration, is only the first major initiation. It's the first solar initiation, really, and you'd simply become a disciple in relation to Sirius at that time, from the standpoint of the hierarchy. It marks the moment in time and space when the initiate sees truly, because there's so much of illusion that is lifted there, and for the first time, the door which opens onto this higher way sees the possibility at the fifth degree to really prepare for treading this higher way, making the decision at the sixth degree, but certainly studying the nature of the decision which might be made from the fifth degree onward. Then if he chooses the path that the Christ chose, and there is no reason that he should, you know, leaving us very free, he will set his face to go up to Jerusalem, and this means Shambhala. Jerusalem, Jerusalem is Shambhala. But there are many paths to be chosen, seven paths, seven ways to choose, and now nine. Later in the book he tells us that paths have been added here. And he, you know, the Christ chose the path of earth service. I mean, he is abidingly with us ever since 500 B.C., really, when the Buddha handed to him, in the way these things are done, who knows, the headship of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. And usually the Bodhisattva's term of service is 2,500 years, but the Christ chose a still longer duration, 5,000 years, which is very unusual. And I think that kind of continuity was needed. You know, there is kind of an overlap between the sign constellation Pisces and Aquarius, and maybe that presented the opportunity to bridge those two. So he is the has been the world savior for the Piscean Age, which is shortly coming to an end, and he will continue to be world savior, world teacher, the one who keeps the great wheel turning all during the Aquarian Age. He will be, as we know, reinforced by the Avatar of Synthesis, the Spirit of Peace, and the Buddha himself. So what a tremendous support he will have for this monumental task of leading the cream of humanity into the fifth kingdom and elevating all of humanity in that process, and bringing about, inspiring the externalization of the hierarchy. Well, friends, you know, I did want to, these are some things, some of the things that I've hinted at in past writings. Now he's going to be more explicit. They have been touched upon vaguely and mysteriously by past teachers and somewhat more explicitly by myself. And I suppose HPB touched upon some of these things, but she was under the directorship of Master DK, technically considered, but, you know, working also with her master, Master M, and with Master KH, who is DK's master. So now he's going to be a little more definite in this new section. Well, I think, friends, I wanted to get this started, you know. there's something about plunging in here, and so this will be the end of Rays, how shall I call it? Rays and Initiations, okay, Webinar Commentary. Rays and Initiations Webinar Commentary Program 1, and this will be 1 hour. And let's see where we are. In terms, we're on page up to 327, and where did we begin? Might be nice to know that. We began at 321. So 321 to 327. That's where it is. Okay. 321 to 327, and we'll be beginning Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program 2, starting page 327. Right. Let us do the Great Invocation to start the ball rolling here, you know. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Okay, friends, just don't know how long this will take. Maybe maybe a few years, I'm not sure. And meanwhile, I'll be doing other things, submitting other programs for you along the lines of meditations on identification and occasional specialized subjects and so forth. So we have begun then the rays and the initiations part two. And, you know, if you wish, go to Makara and read the commentary I've provided for you on the first part of the book. It'll take some doing. One of my friends who has a class going in California said they've just finished it now using all the commentaries, and I guess it's taken a few years to do, but you can catch up and see what that may be all about. Some of you have already done it. So we'll see you shortly, and all the best to you. See you soon. Rays and the Initiations, Part 2. Bye-bye.